someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me. Where troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops, that's where you.
America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thanks to everybody for being along with us on the Guy James Show on this start of the Memorial Day weekend. Yes, Memorial Day weekend. Lots of people will be getting together and having picnics and going to the lake and I don't know what all this weekend. I heard Rush Limbaugh say today that the price of gasoline would not affect this holiday whatsoever. He says that the price of gasoline has had, and this is his words, zero effect on the economy so far. Yes, sir. Rush Limbaugh said. And if Rush Limbaugh says it, why, you know, it must be true. It has to be true. And speaking of Rush, I see Walgreens. Walgreens drug chain is pulling their theft-prone OxyContin off of the shelves. They're taking it out. They must have heard that Rush has been stalking some of their stores down there in Southeast Florida. Yeah, you can't get OxyContin at Walgreens anymore, and if you're used to getting it there, well, I guess you can thank old Rush for that. That's where he probably got the, you know, that truckload of it that he had. But so much for the pig boy today. No more will we talk about him. I don't think we've got anything else scheduled to talk about Mr. Limbaugh today. Very glad to have you along with us on this holiday weekend. We're kicking it off. Yesterday, I gave you some phony information. Yes, I did. And I apologize. Told you that we would not be having our show on Monday. We will, in fact, have our show on Monday. In fact, the Horn Radio Network, Head On Radio Network, is going to be fired up all live on Monday. Every show is going to be live. Let me see. We're going to have the Guy James Show from 3 to 5. We're going to have Bruce Birch on from 5 to 7, and Head On with Bob Kincaid from 7 to 10, followed by John Crazy Like a Fox from 10 to 1 a.m. So live programming all day here on the Head On Radio Network on Monday. No canned shows like all the other talk shows will be out on their yachts sipping martinis and all. Meanwhile, the Head On Radio Network bunch will be here hard at work, so there you go. We've got that all corrected. And if you've never listened to some of the other programs on Head On Radio Network, go to WhiteRoseSociety.org. You'll find them there. And again, that's going to be our show as normal, usual time on Monday. And Bruce Birch is going to be on from 5 to 7. And Head On with Bob Kincaid from 7 to 10. If you've never listened to those programs, you need to. And John Crazy Like a Fox from 10 to 1 a.m. So we'll have a good old time on Monday and enjoy the holiday, too. Have our potato salad and all that sort of thing. I hope, anyway. Many things to talk about today. You can give us a call, 866-546-5254. This is going to be a heading into the holiday weekend relaxed Friday is exactly what it's going to be. We're just going to take it easy today. Sit back, hopefully talk about a few things you might enjoy hearing about. Hopefully you'll talk about a few things I want to hear about, and we'll have some conversations. I hope you're there today. And my, oh my, oh my, lots on the plate since yesterday. Whoa. Where did they just keep shoveling it at us, don't they? They just do. And of course, this deal this morning at the Rayburn Building, shots fired at the Rayburn Building. You know, when I first heard that, a bulletin on CNN, I thought, well, one of them's finally gone nuts. Hastert or DeLay or somebody like that went crazy and started shooting people. But are gone postal, as a lot of them like to say. My apologies to all you postal workers. But let's face it, there's plenty of them in there who are crazy and capable of going postal, and I thought maybe the FBI had maybe invaded and the congressmen had their furniture piled up in front of their doors and they were having a good old-fashioned shootout, you know, what happened. But as it turns out, those shots fired, the report we have is, the latest report is, those shots fired in the Rayburn Building was an elevator man. A maintenance man working on the elevator, and the shots fired were a hammer with him pounding on the side of one of the elevators in the Rayburn Building. Those people get a little nervous. And let me tell you how nervous they get. Guns drawn, the police briefly sealed off the Capitol Friday and launched a floor-by-floor search of the largest office structure on Capitol Hill after an unidentified caller reported gunfire. And amid chaos and confusion, police said there were no arrests or confirmation of the gunfire. But here's the bad part. A staffer for Representative Jeff Kingston, Republican of Georgia, the staffer, was taken from the Rayburn House office building on a stretcher. She was transported to hospital by ambulance. Police say that she may have suffered from a panic attack. So there you go. We had at least one casualty from the non-story that happened at the Rayburn Building. Always something happening in there. Have you ever gone to the Rayburn Building or the Russell Building or any of the buildings there on Capitol Hill? I'm surprised, even since 9/11, the security's not like it is down at the White House and all. You can kind of walk around the building. Once you get in the building, you can go any place you want to. I mean, it's no problem at all. You do have to walk through the metal detectors and all. Oh, and by the way, yours truly, we'll be heading to Washington coming up on the 12th and 13th and 14th of next month. We'll be doing our show live from there and from the Washington Hilton. And we'll be there broadcasting from the Take Back America Conference Radio Row. And that's going to be a good time. I know we'll enjoy that. There are going to be a lot of great guests going to be there. I'll get you that list. We'll be talking about that from time to time. But going to be a terrific list of guests there, and it'll be a good time had by all and an interesting time, that's for certain. What else do we have on our list today? Oh, the Senate immigration bill. I don't know where you stand on that, on this, but that bill, I got to tell you, whether you're for tightening up immigration or for loosening it, whatever you're for, if you'll read that bill very closely, which I've kind of skimmed it and got what I consider to be the juicy parts, you know how that goes, that bill is a disaster, and it's hard to believe that adults wrote that bill. I mean, it really is. It's crazy. Maybe you don't think so. And like I said, it doesn't make any difference whether which side you're on that bill. It doesn't make a bit of difference on it. None. It's the weirdest bill I think I've ever seen go through the Senate, and so quickly. And a bunch of morons evidently wrote it up. There's a $3,200 fine if you've been here, if I've got this right, if you've been here 5 years or more or less. 5 years or more. Yeah, 5 years or more. You can pay a $3,200 fine and stay in this country and sign up for English classes. There's nothing in it about enforcement. There's nothing in it about penalizing employers who hire illegals. Nothing in there about employers that hire illegals. And after all, that's what the big business push for this thing against, you know, the immigration controls is all about. They want the cheap labor here. They want to be able to hire them, and nobody say anything. Absolutely amazing. The states, did anybody in the Senate give a damn what anybody in the states down there thought about in Texas, Mexico, New Mexico, Arizona, and California? No. Evidently. It's a nightmare, that bill is. And I just don't know how. I don't know how they got it passed. I really don't. I just would think any level-headed senator would have looked at this whole thing and said, hey, wait a minute. If we want a bill, let's at least get a good bill. Let's don't pass an idiot bill like this one is. I mean, it's really crazy. There's some crazy things in it. And then again, we have another vote in the Senate that took place yesterday. And, actually took place this morning. Seems like yesterday already. On General Hayden taking over top post at the CIA. And once again, I'm amazed by the Democrats in the Senate. Absolutely amazed. Here we have a man whom I have contended needed to be court-martialed, not taking over the CIA. Here's a man that is all for spying on the citizens of the U.S. Here's a man who didn't, you know, he knew it was illegal that the NSA was going to spy on the citizens, and he went ahead and did it anyway. And here's a man who is now ahead of the CIA, almost said KGB, because I fear that under him, that organization, the CIA, will become more KGB-like. And if you don't like me saying that, why, that's just tough, because that's what it seems like with a military general taking over, especially this military general. And I want to call out Democratic senators. The vote was 78-15, and of course there were seven not voting. I don't know what their reasons were for not voting. I suspect maybe a couple of them had good reasons for not voting. I suspect some of the seven were just plain gutless, and that wouldn't surprise anybody now, would it? The Democrats that voted for it, Akaka from Hawaii, Baucus from Montana, Bai from Indiana voted against it. Bingaman from New Mexico voted yes. Boxer from California didn't vote on it. Bird from West Virginia, yes. Dorgan, Durbin, and Feingold, all no. Thank you, gentlemen. Feinstein from California, yes. Harkin, Iowa, no. In a way, Hawaii, he didn't vote. Menendez, New Jersey, no. Barbara Mikulski, what's happened to her lately? Yes. Murray, Washington, yes. Of course, Nelson, Florida, yes. Nelson, Nebraska, yes. Obama, no. Pryor, yes. Reed, yes. Reed of Nevada, yes. Rockefeller, did not vote. Salazar from Colorado did not vote. Who else do we have on here? Carper voted yes. Clinton, no. Conrad from North Dakota, Kent Conrad, did not vote. Dayton from Minnesota voted no. Thank you. Dodd voted no. Johnson from South Dakota voted yes. Cole from Wisconsin, yes. Mary, Republican, Landrieu, yes. Surprise to me here, Lautenberg, yes. Leahy, yes. Levin, yes. And no surprise, Joe Republican Lieberman, yes. Blanche Lincoln, Arkansas, yes. Sarbanes, yes. Schumer, yes. Stabenow, Michigan, yes. One Republican, if I got it figured out right, one Republican voted no, and that was Arlen Specter. Who can figure Arlen Specter? He's going out and work his tail off to get Santorum reelected now, I see. But I want to say, especially, I don't know what I want to say to all those Democrats that voted yes for this man. He's got no business being head of the CIA. You know it. I know it. The senator should have known it. I'd love to hear each and every one of the Democrats I just mentioned to you that voted yay on this come forth, have to come forth to their constituents and explain their vote. Of course they will not, but they should have to. I think it's a disgrace, an absolute disgrace that this many Democrats voted for this man. I would tell you this right now. I think if George Bush, if I were voting on anything George Bush brought up right now, I probably would have to vote no were I in the Senate. And I'll tell you why. It maybe wouldn't be anything personally against George Bush. It's just that everything he has touched has turned to crap. It's just that everything he recommends is crap. And why would you vote and help this guy out, do anything on his agenda, when his whole agenda has been just a disaster for America? Why would you do that? Especially a man so in favor of this. You watch now. You just watch. Some of these people, some of these Democrats who voted yes to put this NSA spying weasel ahead of the CIA, some of them will continue to complain about government spying on American individuals. They will. When they get the chance to get their FaceTime on the talk shows, the Sunday morning shows, wherever they can get their FaceTime, and they love to get it, when they do, they will continue to stand up and say, oh, I think it's terrible that they're spying on American citizens, when they vote for Hayden to be the new CIA director. And they wonder why some of we Democrats are unhappy with the party. This past Monday, I don't know how many of you saw it. I did want to at least mention it. And you've seen this started to float around. I know you have. This past Monday, Junior Bush was speaking in Chicago, and once again, he brought up the name of a great American president, Harry S. Truman. And once again, this little man, this little insignificant speck upon American history, tried to make an analogy between himself and President Truman. And I doubt anything Junior Bush could say would be more ludicrous or more laughable, even downright pitiful than that. One thing history teaches, the president said, if you look back at some of the written word when Harry Truman had the vision of helping Japan recover from the war and become a democracy, a lot of people were saying it's a waste of his time, hopelessly idealistic, they would say, but he had faith in certain fundamental truths. Junior Bush and those close to him often try this tactic nowadays. They want to try and say that the challenges facing America since September 11th are equivalent to those facing Harry Truman in the late 40s and early 50s. They even go so far as to insinuate that the stature of leadership during those times was essentially the same, and that is laughable. And while it's true that Truman's and Bush's presidency each faced new threats to America, and each of them came up with their own doctrine, the Bush Doctrine and the Truman Doctrine, their solutions to the respective problems are markedly different, vastly different, actually. In fact, their solutions to their problems are not comparable whatsoever. That's why I really resent this analogy they try and make. Bush chose to start a war, and Truman chose to prevent another war. And the thought processes of these two men is worlds apart, and Bush and his people know it, but they still insist upon making this ridiculous comparison between a great man and a total loser. The fact is, I can sit here and compare myself to Franklin Roosevelt if I want to. My doing that doesn't diminish the greatness of President Roosevelt, but it sure as hell makes me look hopelessly stupid. And that is exactly what Bush is doing every time he trots out this foolish little analogy. You know, one can possibly understand the reasoning of the Bush people and Bush himself wanting to do this. Harry Truman's popularity was in the dumpers when his presidency ended, too. His party had their clock cleaned in the 1950 midterms, just like Republicans are going to have happen to them this fall. And they want to think that history will be kind to them, just like it's been kind to President Truman. Dream on, boys, dream on. Bush and his people want to believe that the Bush War will turn out to be this big success with American-style democracy spreading over the entire Middle East. And they're well aware that Truman's plans for Germany and Japan worked out very well for American interests, and for the world for that matter, and they want us all to believe that starting a war was just as great a strategy as was containing Germany and Japan by Harry Truman. The people know that today, many years after being vilified by the Republican Party and some of the American people, Harry Truman is a much-respected, beloved, huge presence in American history and will be for all time. As long as this great country lasts, Harry Truman will be known as a giant among men. He will always be mentioned as one of our greatest presidents. And the Bush people like to think that Junior Bush and Truman are a lot alike personally, both of them kind of homespun, less than eloquent speakers, and Harry spoke his mind, and Bush does too, although one often wonders if there is much on Bush's mind. And both are known for being stubborn once they made up their minds. The only thing is that Harry Truman usually made up his mind on the proper side of issues, whereas Bush is almost always on the wrong side of any issue. And the buck always stopped with Harry Truman, but with Bush the buck is passed on to some underling somewhere because he doesn't have the guts to have the buck stop on his desk like Harry Truman did. Bush and his people are dreaming if they think their legacy will turn out like Harry Truman's. Think about it. The Iraq War is lost, and Afghanistan doesn't look much better right now either. And it's painfully obvious to everyone who has eyes that Iraq and Afghanistan stand no chance of turning out to be the successes that are Japan and Germany. You know, under Truman, we had the Marshall Plan, we had NATO, the UN, the IMF, the World Bank, and most importantly, I believe, Harry Truman left no doubt in the rest of the world as to which nation was now the world leader. These were monumental achievements, and these are the reason Harry Truman commands the respect of the world even today. Did you know, and I want you to think about this, did you know that in Athens, Greece, there's a statue of Harry Truman in Omonia Square, the main square in town? Because of Harry Truman's greatness and what he did in the Marshall Plan and the Truman Doctrine, do you think there'll be a statue of George Bush anywhere else in the world other than his own backyard in Crawford, Texas? Future presidents of the United States were truly blessed to have had Harry Truman precede him for his visionary ideas made it possible for this nation to command the respect of every other nation on this planet. And so I ask you, other than death and destruction, what will the Bush administration leave behind for the people of this nation and the world? I promise you, the legacy of Junior Bush will be one which the Republican Party chooses to run and hide from. And as I mentioned earlier this week, as we mourn the passing of a great American, Senator Lloyd Benson, I offer this tribute to him. Mr. Bush, I knew Harry Truman. Harry Truman was a friend of mine. And Mr. Bush, you are no Harry Truman. I hope he stops this nonsense. It sickens me when he or anybody in his administration tries this absolute insane nonsense of trying to say that his legacy is going to be anywhere, anywhere but in the toilet. And let's be honest, that's where it is. That is where it will be forevermore. I realize that this man isn't going to run anymore. And I also realize, and everybody in the Republican Party realizes, that he is an anchor around the neck of every Republican running for Congress and Senate right now. We must keep that in mind. It's amazing to look and see how people of his own party are abandoning him. Joe Scarborough. There wasn't a better Bush apologist than Joe Scarborough. He said Blair makes Bush look ignorant. Blair comes out and he's talking about the weird press conference last night, or that joint statement. It's, what was it, 7:30? Did you watch that? Did you not think that was a very strange-looking affair? I certainly did. I watched it and I thought, you know, this is odd. First of all, it's at an odd time. And Bush and Blair both look like a couple of stooges. Usually Blair looks better than he does. Tony Blair didn't have his blue dress on. I noticed he did have a blue shirt on. But, yeah, he'll only wear the blue dress and those beautiful blue pumps I told you about yesterday in private with Mr. Bush, I'm sure. And somebody in the audience, I don't know who it was, and I can't say for sure, but I believe the questions were planted by the White House. I am sure they were in some effort to try and resurrect Mr. Bush's, resurrect him in any way whatsoever. So I've just got a couple of cuts from last night. When they ask him, Mr. Bush, you know, have there been any mistakes? You remember when they asked him during the debates, had he made any errors in judgment, and he said he couldn't think of any. Well, my goodness, I guess he's thought it over, and he could think of a few, and I'll just give you a few cuts of them if you didn't hear them.
I think the biggest mistake that's happened so far, at least from our country's involvement in Iraq, is Abu Ghraib. We've been paying for that for a long period of time.
And Mr. Bush, did you?
Dead or alive, that kind of talk. I think in certain parts of the world it was misinterpreted, and so I learned from that. Saying "bring it on," kind of tough talk, you know, that sent the wrong signal to people. No question that the Iraq War has created a sense of consternation here in America.
I guess you could say that. and did you see his body language as he answered his question? I do believe it was a plant. I may be wrong. But, you know, somebody in that White House, one of his advisors, somebody must have told him back during the debate, man, that was a stupid move to say you couldn't think of any mistakes. You know, only Jesus and Muhammad and the prophets would say they hadn't made any mistakes. And then they might even say they made some. I don't know. But here we had a man saying that he was mistakeless. Is that a word? I don't know. He had made no errors, and now he's very very contrite. He now has things that he has done that that he regrets. And I just found it odd that he would all of a sudden start coming up with you know, some of these things that he has right now. I don't know. It was a really was a pitiful display of a phony contrition last night. Him standing there with his best girlfriend saying that he shouldn't have said bring him on and dead or alive. And it really was a bit more than I could take. And everyone with eyes and ears that watched that thing should know he didn't mean a damn word of those statements. And his body language proved it to me. And those statements, bring him on and dead or alive, are Junior Bush. He is a smart-ass braggart who thinks he's God's gift to the world. So him standing there giving this shifty-eyed statement about mistakes he's made was totally ridiculous. The guy doesn't know how to tell the truth, and that's so painfully obvious. He's a ruthless politician with no morals, no ethics, no charisma. He's done. He's cooked. He's finished as a credible president. And his legacy, like we said before, is going to be one of shame and failure. So you can say it all you want, Bushy boy. We heard what you said last night, and we don't believe a word of it. Do I think he's any contrite or apologetic about anything he's done? Hell no. Do I think you could ask him if he was sorry that 2,500 Americans have died in Iraq, if they've died in vain? I don't think he's a bit sorry. He would do it again. He would do it again in a heartbeat. Given the choice, he would absolutely do it again. You know he would. You know, he had a busy week. First he says he's Harry Truman, and then he tells us what we've been waiting for. He says he's so damn happy with the new government in Iraq, you know, the new government that really isn't a government yet because they can't find anyone to fill a couple of the important posts because they've got no control whatsoever over the country because of their civil war. Anyway, Bush thinks he'll be able to draw down our troop level in Iraq by 30,000 or more by the end of the year. First time I've heard him say something like that. It couldn't be that because it's an election year, could it, that he said something like that? So Bush says, and I quote, "The new Iraqi government does not change America's objective or our commitment, but it will change how we achieve those objectives and how we honor our commitment. And as the new Iraqi government grows in confidence and capability, America will play an increasingly supporting role. To take advantage of this moment of opportunity, the United States and our coalition partners will work with the new Iraqi government." How many new Iraqi governments is this now? "To adjust our methods and strengthen our mutual efforts to achieve victory over our common enemies." Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. "We now have reached," Mr. Bush says, "a turning point in the struggle between freedom and terror." You know, I find it absolutely fascinating that Bush is talking about a drawdown of troops right now when we're at a peak of violence in Iraq. The training of the Iraqi forces that he's been crowing about is an abject failure, no matter how you measure it. He continues to say we'll step down when they step up, and the fact is the Iraqis have been running down the steps as fast as their legs will carry them. We train 100 of them, and 200 of them run away the next day. That's just the way it's been. Those are the facts. And if you don't believe that, you ask the guys with the boots on the ground over there. Don't ask the generals. Don't ask the people in politics. Go ask the guys in boots with the boots on the ground just how well the Iraqi troops and police force are doing over there. Just ask them how courageous those people really are and how serious they really are about taking care of their very own country. Then you'll find out the truth. You've heard the letters we read from troops here on this program about the abilities and the courage of the Iraqi troops and police. You've heard all of that. They're not standing up. Most of them get their first paycheck and then run like hell the other way. And maybe they've got good reason. There's been so many of them killed. But, you know, he links our drawdown to their troops stepping up, and they're not stepping up. And he says we're going to withdraw a bunch of troops. Do you see the big lie here? And Bush's statement comes when our State Department tells us the violence is on the rise in Iraq. It's not going down. And I also heard the most astonishing statement from the administration the other day, saying one-third of Americans want the troops to come home, one-third want them to stay, and one-third of the American public is persuadable. Persuadable? Are there people actually sitting around waiting to be persuaded about this issue? And if you are sitting around waiting to be persuaded on this issue, where have you been and what the hell is wrong with you? Just you wait and see. You mark my word, when Johnny comes marching home, the press will be covering every possible welcome home ceremony, and rightly so. But there never has been, nor there ever will be, any public ceremony for those American soldiers coming home in government-issue coffins. Typical of this administration, isn't it? Make political hay from soldiers coming home from a war they never should have been involved in the first place, and then completely ignoring those who have made the ultimate sacrifice. This is just one more reason to repudiate this administration and everyone who agrees with them. Everyone. You know what? I'm going to do something I shouldn't do, but I had so many people email me yesterday and want to hear that song we played again yesterday about the girl in the war and by Josh Ritter. So I'm going to do that right now. Radio people normally don't do this sort of thing, but I'm going to honor the wishes of our listeners, and we're going to play that Josh Ritter Girl in the War song again. Here you go.
Peter said to Paul, you know all those words we wrote are just the rules of the game, and the rules are the first to go. But now talking to God is Laurel begging Hardy for a gun. I got a girl in the war, man, I wonder what it is we've done. Paul said to Petey, you gotta rock yourself a little harder. Pretend the dove from above is a dragon and your feet are on fire. I got a girl in the war, Paul, the only thing I know to do is turn up the music and pray that she makes it through. Cause the keys to the kingdom got locked inside the kingdom, and the angels fly around in there, but we can't see them. I got a girl in the war, Paul, I know that they can hear me yell. If they can't find a way, they can't find a way to help, or they can go to hell. Thank you. Paul said to Pete, you gotta rock yourself a little harder. Pretend the dove from above is a dragon and your feet are on fire. But I got a girl in the war, Paul, her eyes are like champagne. They sparkle, bubble over in the morning, all you got is rain. They sparkle, bubble over in the morning, all you got is rain. They sparkle, bubble over in the morning, all you got is rain.
Tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century, and how do we resolve conflicts between tribes in the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that it's sovereign. It's, you've been given sovereignty, and you're viewed as a sovereign entity, and therefore the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so, too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Oh, yeah. Hey, we're back with you. And, gosh, I got some email already from folks that they do enjoy that song. And, again, that's, well, I'll try and get that posted on the website. It's by a gentleman named Josh Ritter, and I love everything he does. I've recently, just very recently, discovered him. Very, very, very fine artist. Very fine artist, in my humble opinion, anyway. Glad to have you with us this afternoon. Many, many things going on as we speak. Hey, I got a question for you. If you do call, do you think Fitzgerald is going after Darth Chaney? I do. I think that's the prize. I think he's got his eye on. I think he's after Chaney. I mean, who could blame him? But Scooter Libby might just be the window dressing for the big shebang at the end, and he might be going after the Vice President of the United States. And oh, please God, let it be so. Please let it be so. I'm not that kind of a guy that sits around and wishes for things like that. But in this particular case, please let me have this one wish. This one political wish. Oh, please. To see Dick Cheney frog marched out of the White House would be, well, just be the wildest dream come true. I mean, I cannot think of anybody in the history of in my history of political life, and all my political life, nobody even comes close. Not even Tom DeLay. And I know. A lot of you are going to say, well, wait a minute. But nobody comes close to being as despicable as Richard Cheney. I just don't think anybody comes close. Donnie Rumsfeld, maybe he's right in there. But Cheney's in the class by himself. He really is. So I kind of think Fitz is going after him. I really do. And I was looking at the poll. Zogby's got a new one out. It says only 24% of the people trust Bush. 24%? Jeez. 27% had trusted Attila the Hun. Yeah. 29% trusted Idi Amin. And Castro's got better numbers than that as well. Jeez, 24%. Amazing number. Absolutely amazing. Hey, let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
Hi. I'd like to talk about three different things that on yesterday's show, but I'm not going to take long.
Okay.
The first one was, you know, when I agreed for you to talk about the Democrats,
mm-hmm.
they weren't actually to our liking at all. Well, the biggest reason we should do that is that we don't want our people to be 10 gods like people think Bush is. You know, you're not supposed to say anything about Bush.
Nope.
Like he's some kind of 10 god. And we shouldn't want to be like that. You know, nobody's perfect in office, and we should be able to criticize them.
That's right. Who is it? It was Teddy Roosevelt that said not to criticize the president when he needs is morally treasonable.
That's right. And and as far as the voting, I don't understand why they do that, why the Democratic Party does that, the senators and all, because why can't they stand up for something? Because don't I'm sure they know that we the people are against a lot of these people they're voting for. And wouldn't they just, the people are going to go in anyway. The Republicans are a majority. So why not stand up for the people instead of what you want? I just don't understand it.
What they do is they look at their poll numbers and they see whether they're safe or not. And if they're safe, if they know they can get away with one like this, they'll go ahead and vote how they want to, how their backers, their big, mm-hmm. I'm talking their big backers, not you and I. I'm talking to people that shovel the money into their campaign.
Yeah.
So they'll decide if they're safe or not. And if they can get away, you know, it's like Joe Biden voting for the bankruptcy bill.
Mm-hmm.
He knew.
He loved to hear himself talk.
Yeah, well, he knew he was safe in his state. He knew he could vote that way in his
uh-huh.
state and get away with it, and he did. And that's why these senators are. They check out the polls. If it looks like they can go ahead and satisfy their big contributors, they do so, and they don't much care what you and I think.
Well, I don't know. Anyway, I don't think they're real Democrats when they're doing that, because we Democrats, you know, we try to see all sides of the story, especially
that's right.
the liberals. And then you were talking about Lou Dobbs.
Yes.
Now, Lou Dobbs is my hero. I started watching him maybe a year ago, I don't know. And I thought, I don't really like this guy. I just never would have thought I would like him. But he is the only one, only voice speaking out for the middle class of America, the working man of America.
He is.
And he really does. Now, I don't agree with everything he says, and I probably don't agree with everything you say.
No.
And I know he's a Republican, but a lot of Republicans have gotten on there and been surprised that he does not agree with them.
You know what I like
he
most?
Really stands up.
Oh, what I love most about Lou Dobbs is I believe he's absolutely honest and forthright.
I do too.
When he says something, whether you agree with him or not, you know he believes it, and I really admire that about him.
And he's coming from the point of the immigration of the working people. And he believes that the companies that go down and get them on their buses and all like that, he agrees that they should be fine. I think that's where it should all start.
He knows that the big business is behind this, that they don't want to be checked for hiring illegals. He knows that, and he says so. And and you're right, he is a Republican. He's a hard and fast Republican and always will be.
Yeah.
But when something's wrong, he'll say so. And again, you're right. I don't always agree with everything he says, but he's honest.
Yeah, and that's what I don't have to agree with everything, you know.
Nope.
But I like somebody that's genuine and really cares about the people, because that's what our country's supposed to be for.
And it should be particularly true for people on the airwaves and on TV and all. They should be particularly honest, I think. It's not always the case, though, I'm afraid.
And I saw the Snow interview, and he kept saying to Lou, well, I'm not letting you get away with that.
Yeah.
But anyway, the other thing I wanted to talk about was American Idol.
Yes.
And I've only been watching it last 2 or 3 years. A friend of mine, you know, got me into it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think I wanted to watch it. But I'm telling you, their last shows that they put on are some of the best ever. And I don't know why they don't rerun them.
Oh, yeah, you know. I guess they made enough money the first time around.
Great.
Yeah, that one the other night. I loved it. I did.
Yeah, and Paris was sang with Al Jarreau.
Mm-hmm.
She was so good. She was my first choice.
She's going to be a star. There's no question about it. Of course, she's got the bloodlines.
and one more thing about Taylor.
Yes.
Did you see where in his hometown where all the little kids had their hair dyed gray?
Yeah, I thought that was real cute. I really did. I thought that was really cute.
That'd be something if that spread is a...
Yeah. I like that boy. I do.
Yeah, he's great. Okay.
Thanks for your call, Juanita.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, it's Jim Guy. How you doing?
Hi, Jim.
Listen, I was listening to you earlier, but we had a power failure and I lost you. But you were talking about Bush's lack of contrition.
Yes.
Well, you know, I think Mae West had a good saying about the people in the Bush regime. I don't call it an administration, I call it a regime. These people are so crooked, they use a corkscrew for a ruler.
I tell you, Mae West, that woman could crank them out, couldn't she? That's the beauty. A corkscrew for a ruler. I like that. Yeah.
That's it. I had the pleasure to wish her a Merry Christmas over the phone back in 1972.
Oh, my word.
It was quite a experience. She was listed in the Hollywood phone book.
Oh, my. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. On Rothmere.
Oh, my gosh.
Big penthouse on top of a white building she owned. Everything in the apartment was white.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, she was quite a character.
Yeah, she was. Why don't you come up and see me sometime?
That's right. And a man in the house is worth two on the street.
Yeah.
Speaking of this, what about Mr. Blair wearing a blue dress? Has he gone into cross-dressing?
No, I just, I think he has, I think his, you know, I've been using that for a metaphor.
Okay.
Of the way that he and Prime Minister, all of a sudden, now I can't think of his name, from Australia. I think that's been a metaphor for me to use, that both of those guys have serviced Mr. Bush in any way he wished on the war. And so that's why I've said that. Mr. Howard from Australia is what I meant to say. Yeah.
Right. You know, I thought Tony Blair was made of sterner stuff, but he's become so obsequious with Bush, it's just incredible.
Yes, he has. He's acquiesced almost everything Bush has wanted to do. Now that he's apparently going to be leaving soon, he's balking about going into Iran, which is the right thing to do. But before that, he's been, as they say in England, Bush's toady.
Unfortunately, you're right, and they probably will, I guess, try something with Iran, do you think?
I think they will. I don't think there's any question about it. I think they're going to do it, come as the old saying goes, come hell or high water. I think they will go after Iran in some fashion. I think the heat's on for them to do it. I think Israel's in there clamoring for them to do it, and they want something done, and I think something will be done. I
don't even want to think about that.
No, I don't either.
We're talking about literally something that could, you know, we have a repeat performance of the events that preceded World War One.
Yeah, that's like starting. I don't know if a lot of people. I remember not far from where I used to live, there was this huge. Well, it was 30 or 40 miles away from it, but there was this huge stockpile where they dumped rubber tires.
Mm-hmm.
And there were millions of them in there. And one time that thing caught on fire, this place did. And they didn't get it put out for a couple of years. no matter what they did. And I think that's what you're facing in the Middle East. If they start a fire in there, it's going to burn until it burns itself out. Nobody will be able to put it out.
Well, I think if they do, it's going to really cause a lot of problems because the Russians are not on our side as far as that's concerned. That's for damn sure.
Certainly not.
I mean, they have a common border with Iran, and I think that they have tried to help the Iranians get their nuclear program going, if I'm not mistaken.
They have. Then we had Cheney go over and insult them recently, once again, the Russians. So, I don't think they're feeling particularly good about us right now.
Not really. But one other thing, I know you're busy, but what scares me is this. Even I think the Iranian leader is a reasonable person. And in my opinion, he is. I may be wrong, but he seems to be a fairly reasonable man, intelligent. I think he's an engineer by profession, a teacher by either avocation or profession. And, you know, he does not seem like a real crazy person. But, I mean, these people have been so deceived by us throughout history. I mean, look who put the Shah into power and what they did to Milosevic and, you know, we have imposed or helped impose so many horrible regimes on those people.
Oh, all over the world. We've put in puppet dictators. We've fed them and let them grow fat, and then we've stepped on them.
Don't serve our purpose.
We've done that to Noriega. We did that to Marcos. We did that, well, the Shah, he got out on his own. We did it to Saddam. We've done it in many, many places.
Unfortunately, what I was going to say is there's also a third factor you've got to put into the equation, and that is the possibility of a rogue element going with a nuclear weapon starting a landslide. That's what scares me, too.
Sure, sure.
I'm not trying to be Tom Clancy or whatever, but, you know, you have to factor in the – you have to really in this day and time, you have to think the unthinkable.
That's right. Outside the box, as they say.
Yes, sir.
Hey, thanks for your call.
Yes.
Good to hear from you. I think you do have to think outside the box on this. Boy, this Iranian situation, I hope it can be defused. It appears that most of the people in the OPEC area are wanting to get involved and try and cool the situation down. The folks in Europe are certainly trying to cool it down. The Russians have shown interest in trying to put out the fire as well. So maybe the Bush administration will be backed into a corner. Maybe the rest of the world will put up such a fuss over this that they won't be able to do anything, although I doubt that the Bush administration thinks in terms of not being able to do something. I think they've decided that they wanted to trample all over the Constitution and have done so, the Bill of Rights, and have done so. They wanted to go to war on a lie and have done so. They've done anything they've wanted to do so far without thought for the consequences. And you know, they've had this devil-may-care attitude since the very beginning. I don't know what's going to happen with it. I wish I did. I wish somebody did. We could save somebody a lot of trouble. Hey, what'd you think of the Kenny Lay victory or defeat yesterday? What was it, 6 counts for him and 19 for Skillings? Those two boys could spend a lot of time in prison. I didn't know. I guess I'm the last guy in the country to know that there's a big-time TV weatherman in Chicago who is Skilling's brother. I didn't know that. I really didn't. And what do you think about this little flap going on over in Pennsylvania with Rick Santorum claiming that he lives in this abandoned house? You know, he doesn't live where his constituency lives, and he says he does, and everybody, the neighbors all say he doesn't. And so the newspaper in the area got wise and sent a letter to the address, and it came back, stamped. How is it they stamp it? No one lives here, no one available, or whatever. It came back to him. Santorum doesn't live there. He knows he doesn't live there, and yet he's still claiming that he does. We've got a similar situation right around here that a certain congressman supposedly has a residence here. Supposedly lives here. Everybody knows he doesn't. Everybody. Just about everybody, except the people that voted for him, I guess. But they don't care. Why should we care? If your daddy's a famous politician and you want to be a politician and you want to be a congressman for life, just go and tell the voters anything they want to hear and they'll put you in office, especially if you're a Republican around here and they don't care. What the heck? Why should you have to live someplace to represent them? And I don't like that anywhere. I don't like that anywhere. The old carpetbagging thing, they mentioned that about Hillary. I didn't like that. I didn't like it one little bit. Not at all. Carpetbagging is something I've never been very, very fond of, that's for certain. You know, speaking of Chicago as well, as also I was reading a big story today. They're suffering a record foreclosure rates in Chicago in this white-hot economy. Record foreclosure rates. Does not bode well for the middle class at all when you're talking about record foreclosure rates in Chicago. Hey, we're going to stop now for news at the top of the hour. I suggest you stay right where you're at. Maybe if you want, go out to the fridge, get you something cold to drink, maybe a snack or two, handful of crackers or something. Make it something healthy, you know. And we'll be back right after the news at the top of the hour.
This is Quality News Network. A federal judge has rejected a request from former Vice Presidential Chief of Staff Scooter Libby to force ex-New York Times reporter Judith Miller to turn over all her notes, telephone records, and appointment calendar. The judge says the request appears to be nothing more than a fishing expedition. Libby has been indicted on charges of lying to a grand jury. The House author of a border security bill that triggered massive street protests throughout the country is standing firm against amnesty for illegal immigrants and predicts tough negotiations with the Senate on compromise legislation. The Senate passed its immigration bill last night on a vote of 62-36, and Congressman James Sensenbrenner, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee and principal author of the House bill, says that sets up a very difficult House-Senate conference committee because the two approaches on the issue are 180 degrees apart. British Prime Minister Tony Blair winds up his two-day visit to Washington today following last night's joint press conference with President Bush, in which neither of them addressed the subject of troop withdrawal from Iraq. Of the 140,000 troops currently serving in Iraq, only 9,000 are British. The Senate today easily confirmed General Michael Hayden as the new director of the CIA. The vote was 78-15. President Bush has ordered the Justice Department to seal records seized by the FBI from the Capitol Hill office of a Democratic congressman. The order is aimed at quelling an escalating constitutional confrontation between the Justice Department and the House of Representatives. House Speaker Dennis Hastert is threatening to sue ABC News if it does not retract a story that he's being investigated by the Justice Department in a corruption probe. Both he and the department deny it, but ABC News is sticking by the story. In Gaza City, the Hamas militant group has withdrawn a controversial private militia from the streets of the Gaza Strip, saying it wants to avoid further infighting with the rival Fatah movement. In Lebanon, a bomb has killed a senior Palestinian Islamic Jihad official and his brother in an attack that the group is blaming on Israel, which denies any involvement. Nonetheless, Jihad is vowing revenge. In Poland, about 270,000 people today attended a mass by Pope Benedict XVI in the rain in the same Warsaw Square where his predecessor, John Paul II, had inspired Poland's solidarity movement. And an anonymous report of possible gunfire in the parking garage at the House of Representatives office building has prompted Capitol Police to lock down part of the Capitol complex as a precaution. But so far, no weapons, no suspects, no arrests, no injuries, and no confirmation of any gunfire. You're listening to Quality News Network. It's now 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The Commerce Department reports that consumer spending grew last month at its fastest pace in 3 months, but that much of that spending went to pay for higher gasoline prices. And despite those high prices, millions of Americans are expected to be traveling this weekend, the first big holiday of the summer season. And what they'll find is the average price of gas hovering around $2.85 a gallon nationwide, compared with $2.11 a year ago. Bowing to changes in technology and pressure from taxpayers and phone companies, the Treasury Department says it will scrap its 108-year-old federal excise tax on long-distance phone calls, a decision which applies to cell phones and Internet phone services, as well as some landlines. Google and Dell have reached an agreement to install Google software on millions of new Dell computers over the next few years. Drug maker Merck reports that the FDA has approved a new vaccine called Zostavax that prevents shingles in patients 60 and older. It's only for those who have previously had chickenpox. Singapore has picked Las Vegas Sands, the world's top casino operator, to build and run its first casino, a project that will cost more than $3.2 billion. The tiny island nation scrapped a ban on casinos last year. And despite continuing speculation that Treasury Secretary John Snow is about to resign, the president says he's doing a fine job and hasn't talked to him about leaving. Light sweet oil is trading at $71.37 a barrel. The Dow Jones Industrial this hour is up 53 points. NASDAQ is higher by 10, and the S&P 500 is up 6. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Ah, yes, back for the last hour of programming for the week. It's Friday, TGIF, and if you'd like to give us a call, you may do so at 866-546-5254. If you're in the Washington, D.C. area, you can call us locally there on our at our Washington Bureau, 202-370-6153. And if you're in the Phoenix area, you can call the Phoenix Bureau at 623-444-5254. We'd love to hear from you. We'd like to hear your views on what we have to say here on this program, or your views about just about anything on Friday. It's historical on Friday that ratings are always down for talk shows. And I'm not talking about just when I'm talking about the pig boy, the drug junkie, and Hannity and all those folks. Down on Fridays. And so that's why so many people say, hey, it's your show on Friday. You can call in, talk about anything you want to. And I guess we'll go for that. We've talked about a plethora, one of my favorite words. I even like saying it, plethora, of subjects so far today, and we'll be glad to talk about something you'd like to talk about as well on the program, within reason it is. As you know, I'm a student of history. I think I am anyway, and I like to keep myself well-versed on sort of thing, on many historical facts. And it's been, what, a couple of hundred years. It's been... Yeah, it's been a couple of hundred years, I think, before the advent of the internet, a man named Litton wrote that famous phrase, "The pen is mightier than the sword." And we had good old Thomas Paine come along, and you've all heard his name, and he was doing all he could to prove that Litton was correct, that the pen was indeed mightier than the sword. Paine, I don't know how much you know about Thomas Paine, but he had a real knack for starting revolutions. he was successful in helping to start two of them. And you really could say that Paine's common sense, his writings, common sense, might have started the Revolutionary War. And then he went on to France afterwards and was instrumental in helping the French Revolution come along, too. And so in Thomas Paine's case, particularly in his case, his pen was indeed mightier than a lot of swords. And I have to believe that if Paine were alive today, he wouldn't be printing pamphlets, but rather he would be sitting at a keyboard spreading his message over the internet. I think the guy was a visionary, and he would have gone with the flow. He wouldn't have to travel from England to the colonies and then on to France, and he wouldn't have to stand on street corners passing out his pamphlets. And I believe the keyboard is mightier than the pen ever was. Today we can sit at a desk in a remote outpost somewhere. I don't care where, out in the middle of the Sahara Desert, I suppose, if you can get, you could get wireless internet service out there through satellite. But you can sit almost any place and communicate with the entire planet. And it's amazing stuff when you think about it. I know Thomas Paine would be amazed. And the keyboard is so mighty nowadays that the internet may well save the world. And I mean that. Or, on the other hand, when it's in the hands of evil forces, the keyboard can be deadly as well, hence the damage done by right-wing extremists when they spread lies about their political opponents and got a man like Junior Bush elected. So it can be a very dangerous thing as well. It can go both ways. And I've really come to believe that the political situation we find ourselves in right now seems hopeless to both sides. Think about it. My liberal and my progressive friends, and think of how you feel when you visit with your friends and family, maybe at a family dinner or whatever, a bunch of people who may hold opposite political view from yours. You can talk to your blue in the face, and you get nowhere with them, and it usually ends up causing family problems if you do it at a family dinner, a family gathering, Easter or Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever, and you lose some of that closeness you had before, and you just cannot understand how those that disagree with you within your family can possibly hold the views that they do. And you just hope they'll somehow see the light and accept the truth, maybe see the truth somehow. And your relatives go home feeling just the same way as you do. They can't possibly understand how you can reject their views. They don't. After all, in their eyes, they have the truth. And if they happen to be fundamentalist Christians, they have a very hard time understanding how you can reject their views. And as always, conflicts like this come down to to who has the actual truth, not the propaganda that they've been inundated with, but the real deal truth. What do we deal in on this program? Sometimes, as you know, truth can be very hard to come by, but eventually it floats to the top when thinking people see the cracks in the stories of the propagandists promoting lies. You know, sooner or later, truth always comes to light. It always comes up to the top. These propagandists have a way of weaving you've seen this so many times, they'll weave a little bit of truth into their tapestry of lies they're making and make themselves believable because there's a little morsel of truth in it. And it seems to me they depend upon the fact that time erases some truth and they just carefully replace that forgotten truth with some more lies. It's an art. An art the present-day administration is highly skilled in. Highly skilled. Better than anybody. Better than anybody's ever been politically in this country. But if you think about it, how do liars usually give themselves away? They give themselves away with inconsistency. I know I give my age away, but ask anyone who ever watched Perry Mason. The great defense attorney always broke down the liars by exposing the inconsistencies in their stories. That's when the truth came forward, and the guilty ones always, I did it. You know, it's always those inconsistencies that give the liars away. And Bush's own inconsistencies have been what has exposed him as the champion liar that he is. First, it was the WMDs, and then it was the regime change, and then it was the bad intelligence. It was this, and it was that, until the public finally saw through their web of lies. And now they know they were lying all along about nearly everything to do with Bush's war. Karl Rove, the master propaganda, really let it all hang out this week when he said, and I was amazed by this, when he said that people like Junior Bush, they just don't like the war in Iraq. What the hell kind of a statement is that? The war in Iraq, is the guy, you know, Bush is the guy who started the war in Iraq. He says on the one hand that people really like Bush, but they don't like the war. Bush started the war in Iraq. It was his decision. They like him, but they didn't like the war. Hey, I got news for you, Carl. Bush is forever painted with an Iraq war brush, and the paint's not going to come off. Not ever. I'm fascinated by some of this sometimes, watching this. I mean, you know, you sit there and your mouth hanging open. But hopefully, even the most simple-minded viewer to hear Rove's comments would see what an absurdity they are. You would. Well, right now, it's the deception du jour. The lie of the moment. The people don't like Bush anymore, Carl. And all of your horses and all of your men are not going to be able to put Humpty Bush back together again. You need to know that. So, all of you would be Thomas Paine's, if you would, and man your keyboards and spread the truth. That's all you got to do. Study up a little on Thomas Paine, the great pamphleteer, and go to your keyboards and talk to your friends. Maybe do a little blogging and spread the truth. Spread it everywhere. Spread it far and wide. Spread it so that nobody can go on the net without seeing the truth. Let's not stop spreading the truth until we're satisfied the evil and corruption are gone from our government. But this is when we need to use the pen just like a sword to defend the truth. We need to use the internet to remind the world of the lies that were told by this guy that Karl Rove is trying to paint as your buddy in chief right now. It's your duty to go out there and remind everyone about those lies that this guy told us. And we need to repeat that often, very, very often. So, no longer is the pen mightier than the sword. I believe it's the keyboard. And were Thomas Paine here today, he'd be sitting at one of these keyboards right now. You can just bet on that. I'm sure you can. Oh, what is it? About 16 minutes after the hour. I do want to remind you once again that, yes, indeed, we will be here on Memorial Day. We had told you that we would not be, but we will be here on Memorial Day. Good old Memorial Day, with gas prices up 75 cents a gallon over what they were from last year. 75 cents a gallon. And Limbaugh says it's got zero effect. Zero effect on the economy or the Memorial Day travel. I know it's got an effect on my traveling. How about yours? Have you cut down on your traveling? And speaking of Hannity and Limbaugh's outrages, somebody brought up on one of their programs that they were going crazy the other day because of this investigation going on into the military, into the Marine unit that carried out what some people are alleging was the unprovoked killing of 24 Iraqis in the town of Haditha last November. The Marines have sent a group over there to investigate this. This was first, as you know, reported by Time magazine. And now it looks like there's something to it, and the Marine investigators are going in. And Hannity and Limbaugh are just outraged by this. Just outraged that someone would go investigate that some people were killed in cold blood. You know what they're really saying. We don't give a damn if somebody killed a bunch of Iraqis in cold blood. We don't give a damn. That's what they're really saying. And, you know, they're upset that, you know, the reports are that some of the Marines have confessed. Hey, that happens. It happens in war. But we don't need to sit around and defend it. It's wrong, no matter who does it. It doesn't matter. It's wrong. Did anybody defend me lie? I don't think so. Now let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello.
Hello, Guy?
Yes.
Guy, this is John calling.
Hi, John.
I'm calling from near the Pyrenees, they say.
Oh, my goodness. Why, it's good to hear from you.
It's great to hear your voice as well. Guy, I just wanted to make a couple of points with regard to the tribal, tribal sovereignty?
Sovereignty, yes.
Yeah, right. Mr. Bush, he has how many people working for him in the White House? He probably went to that conference, I don't know, it was in some town in the west, I think, of your country.
Yes.
And he has all these people working for him. He goes there, and he didn't ask one of those people to tell him what questions he might be asked by those people.
Oh, he's
in the First Nations conference.
Yes, he's often unprepared.
It is a total lack of respect for the people who make up his constituency, as it were.
Yes,
is it not, Guy?
I agree. I absolutely agree. To go and be asked a question like that about the sovereignty was embarrassing. It's embarrassing to me as an American to have my president go and talk like that and not have a clue what he's talking about.
Really, because it would be laughable if it wasn't so bizarre. Put it that way.
It is, and
it would be laughable.
It is, and you're calling from the Pyrenees. You're in France.
Yes, I am, sir.
Are you a French native?
No, I'm not. I was born in the Republic of Ireland.
All right.
Actually Irish.
Irish living in the Pyrenees.
I'm lucky enough to have a French wife. And we live down here. It's just the night has fallen.
Ah.
It's a beautiful night. It's about Celsius here, it's about 22 degrees, which would be what, about 68 degrees Fahrenheit.
Let me ask
you. It's really beautiful here.
In your,
you know, I meet so many Americans, and I listen to you. I look to people like you as being the hope for America. Really, you know, Jerry Falwell and Mr. Robertson and all those people. They're only world famous in the United States, you know.
Yeah.
People over here hear nothing about them, know nothing about them. And I go around informing the people here how much hatred there is for the French in the United States. They are really, really surprised. But, you know, we like the Americans, they say. Why don't they like us?
Yeah, well, you know, that's been fostered by the right wing here in this country. They have fostered that hatred toward the French because, A, the French didn't want to go along with this illegal war in Iraq, and that made the right wing here absolutely livid that the French had the nerve to say to George Bush that they wouldn't go along with this war. And, you know, that's what fostered most of that. Let me ask you, where you live now, most of the people, you get around your community and talk to the French folks that are there.
Sure, sure.
What is their opinion of George Bush on the world stage? How do they regard Mr. Bush?
Well, I'm not an American, and I don't like coming.
Well, I'm asking the question, and you can be gentle if you like, but I think Americans should all know. I think Americans should know what the opinion is of our president around the world, and I don't think a lot of people do know.
I think what most people believe is that Mr. Bush is a very lazy man. And you, I don't think you can be lazy when you're running the most important country in the world. He doesn't do his homework. He ran off there believing to Iraq, believing that he could achieve something very, very quickly without consequences. I think so a Frenchman said to me recently, if he went to be president of France, saying that Elvis Presley was still alive, he wouldn't have a chance of becoming president of France. Yet Mr. Bush can say that he talks or speaks directly with God and receives instructions from God, as it were, and he can become elected in the United States.
Yes.
People see a little bit of a, how should I say?
Yes. I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
W.S. Gilbert, too, of Gilbert and Sullivan.
Yes.
He wrote in one of his songs one time that every boy and every girl who's born into the world alive is either a little liberal or else a little conservative. So I don't think we can change people.
Very good.
I just want to make one more comment.
Yes, sir.
I don't want to take up your lines too long, Guy. You had a gentleman on there last week who was talking about atheism, and he didn't like, I believe, the way people were blogging at Democrat.org, is that it?
Democratic Underground.
Yeah. Now, speaking as one who's not a particular, I don't have any religion, I'm not a religious person, I would think that one of a persecuted minority in the United States are people who think like me, free-thinkers. There's a great deal of religiosity in the United States, which we don't have over here at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are free to believe and do what they like, but it seems to me in your part of the world that if I were to express my views very freely, I think I might be in danger.
Yes.
Am I being a little over?
No, I don't think you, I think you're being fair, and I will also add this comment as for the gentleman who spoke last week. It wasn't that he didn't think people should have the free speech. It was that people should be respectful of his sensibilities about his beliefs and not intentionally try to hurt him with the beliefs, and that's what went on that he was talking about.
But yet people who are believing Christians will still come to people like me and tell me that I'm going to spend an eternity in penal fires.
Yes.
In damnation and confusion.
Yes, they will.
Now, lucky enough, I feel mature enough not to worry about that too much. But that still is, that's quite a hammer to hit on someone's head.
Oh, sure. Well, we just need to be aware of each other's sensibilities and be more respectful to one another.
You're one of the people in the United States who, as I said before, were the hope. You have got passion about what you feel, and that's the way it should be. But at the same time, where is the idea of, like, give the other guy a chance. Let the other guy have it. The other guy have his beliefs without everybody getting so, I don't know what the word is, physical about it, as it were.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's when it comes to religion and politics in the States, it can get you.
It's a potent brew.
Yes, it is. John, thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate your call. It's the first call that we've gotten from your area of the world, and I very much appreciate hearing from you.
Well, listen, anybody from your listeners who'd like to visit down here, this is a very lovely area around the Pyrenees. You eat well. People are very friendly and very, very welcoming.
Well, great.
Okay, Guy?
Thank you.
Talk to you again.
Thank
Bye.
You very much. Interesting call, no? From the Pyrenees? I have a vision of that. He sent me an email the other day that he was going to call. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello?
Hey.
Hi.
This is Alice from Humboldt.
Hi, Alice.
Oh, you were saying we are somehow kind of stuck in Iraq. I'm afraid they don't want to leave. They are building a giant embassy and any number of military bases. They have selfish reasons for wanting to stay.
Oh, sure. Sure. They have no intentions on leaving.
No. Mm-mm. If it's not raining tonight, I'm going to go down by the courthouse. And I hope that some of the people won't be around.
Oh, they're going to...
I wish you could be there too, guys.
Well, I wouldn't mind being in California tonight. Of course, it's not bad in Florida either.
No, no.
Yes.
Well, they say it's supposed to rain, so I don't know.
No, we're just headed into our rainy
roll
season.
Roll with the punches.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Love your program.
Thank you, Allison. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
See, here first, isn't it great? We hear from the Pyrenees and in France, and then we hear from California. My goodness, we're just all... Hey, I found that little note. It was the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on Rick Santorum's residence. It said he doesn't live here anymore. They wrote this article. The paper sent a letter to Santorum's supposed residence in Penn Hills, Pennsylvania, in March, only to watch the letter bounce back with a sticker from the U.S. Postal Service now, checked as not deliverable as addressed, unable to forward. So there you are. Do you need any further proof that, or maybe it could be that Mr. Santorum just doesn't get his mail, or no one else at that home gets his mail. You know, that could be as well. And I also see that, you know, Dennis Hastert is threatening to sue ABC over this story that he caused all this falder all over the FBI coming into the building and investigating because ABC reported because that the FBI was thinking about investigating him as well. And he is threatening to sue ABC. And ABC's Brian Ross stands by his story that House Speaker Dennis Hastert is under FBI investigation. Ross says, I think our story is accurate. We've gone back to our sources, and they believe what we reported was accurate, and they knew it. George Stephanopoulos, ABC's chief Washington correspondent, called the implications potentially seismic. Ooh. Man, when they start talking like that about things in Washington, potentially seismic. So is there something to this? Who knows? I wish I knew the truth. Hey, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
They got a hot tip. They're switching on the bomb. They brought the dogs in. They're looking under a barn. And they are searching Michigan for Jimmy Hoffa's corpse. And they are searching Michigan for Jimmy Hoffa's corpse. Now come on now.
Where do I come up with these things, eh? That was Josh Millard once again with Oral Times. Remember I told you the other day about that Oral Times website, AURALtimes.com. And he likes to do pertinent news stories in song, just like the woman had, looking for Jimmy Hoffa's corpse. And they are still looking, by the way. You never know what you're going to hear on this program. You just don't. Speaking of unusual stories, you know, we did a little story a while back about this gentleman that his name was Blake Gotsman. You remember the name, Blake Gotsman? He's the 26-year-old college dropout who carries President Bush's breath mints and makes him peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for him. He's going to follow in his boss's footsteps this fall when he enrolls at Harvard Business School, the Harvard Crimson reports. Though it's rare for Harvard Business School or any other professional or graduate school to admit a student who does not have an undergraduate degree. Well, you know, if you're a Bush, you can wave your hand and get a lot of things done. And if you don't believe that, you tell me how the man got through Yale, okay, and Harvard Business School. You tell me that. That's one of the great, well, it's not a mystery. I was going to say it's one of the great mysteries of life. It is not. It's a well-known fact that if your name, you got the right name and deep enough pockets, you can get through just about any school you want to. I think just about everybody knows that. So that's the way it is. We were talking the other day about character. And I had mentioned an article about Junior Bush by Gail Sheehy. And the article provided an insight that seems very prophetic to me. And in this article, she said, and let me quote just a little bit of what she said. Even if he loses, his friends say he doesn't lose. He'll just change the score or change the rules or make his opponent play until he can beat them. If you were playing basketball and you were playing to 11 and he was down, you went to 15, said Doug Hanna, now a Dallas insurance executive. If he wasn't winning, he would quit. He would just walk off. It's what we call the Bush effort. If I don't like the game, I take my ball and I go home, and very few people can get away with that. That's what Gail Sheehy said. One of the things that just mystified me back in the 2000 presidential campaign was that no one in the press, and I'm talking no one in the mainstream press, was willing to point out that Junior Bush has no character. And I don't know how many stories I've told. I can't remember what all I've talked about, but I know people in Washington, and I know a couple of people in Washington very well that have told me many, many stories of Junior Bush's escapades when his father was in the White House. And people just weren't willing to talk about it. They just wouldn't. Many of these people are lifelong bureaucrats, and they won't talk. They keep their mouths shut. Oh, they talk amongst themselves. I could take you in one of the main government buildings very close to the White House. I'm talking very close. And you would hear some stories inside this building about Mr. Bush that you would just, your mouth would hang open and you'd shake your head and say, this can't be true. But these people all know it is true because they've seen it with their own eyes. They've seen his behavior, and they know of his behavior, but they're lifelong bureaucrats, and they're not going to talk to the press about it because they don't want to lose their jobs. So you couldn't get anybody to talk about Mr. Bush's character back during the election, and it became painfully clear that there just wasn't anybody in the Washington press corps that was going to talk about Bush's absolute ruthlessness and his unwillingness to win or lose by the rules of the game. And you want to hear about ruthless? You hear how he talked to people when his daddy was president. You hear how a certain incident that took place in a famous restaurant in Washington, D.C., where he publicly berated and swore in the most awful terms at a well-known Washingtonian sitting there with his wife and two children. And here was George Bush standing here, standing him calling him names that people had never even heard before in a loud and angry and drunken voice. The man is ruthless. He's not this good Christian that everybody purports him to be. And this, what I'm telling you is not about George Bush. It's an indictment of the press, and it's an indictment of our political system we have right now where the truth doesn't come out. You know, the press didn't raise character questions about Bush. Instead, they look at the guy Al Gore, who made it abundantly clear that he was going to abide by the rules in that election, to play fair and square at every turn, and they absolutely excoriated him. They derided him for his wimpiness, and that's what they called it. And we spoke the other day about Bush's trifecta joke. That joke, to me, is where all of Bush's character flaws come running out of him. You know, most economists now say the source of the huge budget deficit is Bush's tax cut plan, the worst parts of which are still to come, and some more of them just did come through very recently. The administration dies, you know, they deny all that. And yet it's clear that while September 11th might have deepened and it might have broadened the budget deficit problem, because of their massive tax cuts, the administration was faced with this chronic budget deficit, no matter what was going to happen. And that gets to the heart of that trifecta joke, whose entire purpose clearly is to blame the deficit on September 11th and its aftermath. That's what's so heartless and cruel about that whole thing. This cute little joke allowed Bush to escape any serious questions about either his failure to balance a budget or particularly his campaign pledge to use the Social Security Trust Fund to pay down the national debt. You all remember that story. Now, the terrible, unspeakable tragedy of 9/11 gave him the political cover he needed for his administration's failures. And to no one's surprise, nobody that knew of him and knew a lot about him, he displayed no hesitation whatsoever to use 9/11. He used it. And that 9/11 trifecta joke actually became his favorite joke. He told it over and over and over again. And never mind that it's probably the most tasteless and insensitive joke ever told by an American president. And that it's absolutely a huge lie. The really noteworthy thing about that trifecta is that in-your-face political opportunism that it represented. But it's nothing out of the ordinary for this administration. Nothing whatsoever. You know, you think back over this administration. They've used... How many different times did they change the color of the terror alerts? We haven't heard that in a long time, have we? Just started to hear it at election time. That's the only time we hear the terror alert, what color it is. Because they've used terror and the threat of it to cover up for their own difficulties. They've done it over and over again. Even back when Ashcroft. You remember John Ashcroft. Dear John Ashcroft. He attacked the critics of his anti-terrorism measures by going in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee and said that this talk only aids terrorists and gives ammunition to our enemies. And, you know, when leaders in the Senate, I remember when Tom Daschle, how quick they forget, Tom Daschle, you know, he questioned Bush's handling of the war on terrorism. And he was accused of aiding and abetting the enemy and accused of not being a patriot. You know, there have been a lot of episodes in this administration where they've used September 11th and its aftermath as a political shield and a weapon. They've used it as a weapon against the Democrats many times. And it probably shouldn't be a surprise. After all, you only need to recall old Karl Rove's instructions to the RNC, and he told them to make the war on terrorism a political issue. And we forget that, and that's part of a man's character. And, you know, it comes up over and over and over again in this administration. The Katrina disaster. The flouting both the Geneva Conventions and American law by claiming the power to ignore them both at will. Allowing oil and energy companies to run absolutely roughshod over every one of the customers in this country. Handing out huge tax breaks to the wealthy. All the while the budget deficits just pile higher and higher and higher. And most of all, invading a nation on false pretenses. And then being completely incompetent to carry out such an occupation or war. You know, so they're the ones that asked that question back when Clinton had his problems. His character counts. You bet it does. And I think we'd all do well to remember that, just like the Republicans did say back during the 2000 election and later on, character counts. It sure as hell does. The only problem for the Republicans is that they're no judges of character whatsoever. Some of us always knew Clinton was a rascal. But Bush had almost every last one of them taken in with his pious Mr. Good Christian Act. They were all suckered in by that one. Absolutely amazing. Really, really amazing that a man got away with that in this day and age. Hey, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Guy James Show.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich. How much can we take? How much can we give? How much is too much, and how much longer can we live? As we turn our backs, turn our eyes, and pretend we don't see. If ignorance is bliss, then full of bliss are we. There's no other way to say it. We've been lied to and misled into another senseless war. How many thousands must lay dead before we wake up from this nightmare and revive the American dream? If we blindly stay the course, this horse will drown us in the stream. Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way. Now the political pollution is so thick and dark and dense. It contaminates and poisons common good and common sense. Ignorance and deference and greed so deeply burn. Why must so many be engulfed in flame before they learn? Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way. You don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way. How much can we take? How much can we give? How much is too much and how much longer?
Oh, yes, you are listening to The Guy James Show. Glad to have you along with us on this start of the Memorial Weekend. What are you doing Memorial Weekend? Going to go have a picnic and all that sort of thing? Are you staying close to home? Are you putting some of that $3 a gallon gasoline in your car and driving all over the place? What are you going to do? You know, a lot of people that suffer in this $3 a gallon gas. I haven't been over to the marinas lately, but I wonder how much the gas is there. Ooh, you know, it's always more expensive in the marina than it is at the gas station. Maybe one of you boaters would give us a call and let us know what the price of gas is in the marinas right now. But boats aren't known for getting really great fuel efficiency, if you know what I mean. Not very great at all. Used to have a boat that would burn, an easy 15, 18 gallons an hour just taking it easy. So, you know, that's the way it is. Hey, let's go to the phone. Let's see who we got. You're on the Guy James Show. Hello? Well, I guess they're not on the Guy James Show. Yeah, you'll have to call us back. Yeah, whoever that was, give us a call back. I don't know what happened there. Don't think we did anything wrong. We pushed the right button, pushed the middle button. So we're thinking about putting in a webcam in the studio. What do you think about that? Do you think we ought to do that? You know, it would probably only be fair if we did that. If you all had webcams in your house, and while we're broadcasting, we could look at all of you, too. See, that would be fair. You could look at us, and we could look back. You do remember we are broadcasting here from Florida, so we like to be comfortable when we're doing our program. We don't have a suit coat and tie on. You know who broadcasts with a suit coat and tie on and said he doesn't feel comfortable if he doesn't? Is Paul Harvey. Paul Harvey said he has always broadcast all of his shows in at least a sport coat and a tie and a long-sleeve shirt. I wouldn't be comfortable doing that. I've never done that. And any time I've done radio all my life, I've never sat in with a suit coat and tie on that I can think of even once. No, not even once. Not my style. Not that I don't like to get dressed up. It's just radio studio is just not the place that you need to do that. That's all. What are you doing on this Memorial Day weekend? I would like to know. There hasn't been anybody tell me what they're going to do this Memorial Day weekend. I think everybody took off early and they're already on their boats and sailboats and all that. Are you a sailboater or a motorboater? I was a motorboater. There's that little rivalry thing going back and always going back and forth between the sailboaters and the motorboaters, you know. They've got this little thing for one another. Of course, the motorboaters call the sailboaters rag pickers. That's right. A little term of affection there, a little affectionate term. Used to be up in Lake Erie during once a year, up on the islands, which is a popular place to go. If you haven't been to Put-in Bay on a holiday weekend in Ohio, you haven't been anywhere, believe me, if you want to see partying. I don't care if you've been to the Keys. I don't care where you've been. At least any place I've been in this country, and I've been pretty much all around it, you have never seen partying like you see at Put-in Bay, Ohio, or good old Launce's Winery on Middle Bass Island out in Lake Erie on a holiday weekend. Oh, I could tell you some stories. But one time a year, it would be the weekend for sailboaters. And the great big huge marina there, they would rope it all off and wouldn't let anybody in for except sailboaters. And I know it was just one weekend a year, but man, that would just make all the motorboaters madder than hell. You know, there's a distinct difference between motorboaters and sailboaters. As they always used to say, the sailboaters would have the Land's End catalog, and they would always have their nice, beautifully embroidered shirts with the little whales and alligators and things on, and with the name of their boat embroidered on their shirt, and with a pair of really beautiful leather deck shoes that cost them $100, and the white sailor's cap and the whole bit. And you got your motorboaters with a pair of stolen flip-flops, a pair of cut-off shorts, and drinking red, white, and blue beer. So big difference between the two. And I don't know if it's like that in Florida. I don't plan on going out to the marina this weekend. But if you are running a boat, you're going to pay a heavy price for it with the gas what it is right now. I'll tell you that much right now. Do want to remind you once again that we are going to be here on Memorial Day. Bruce Birch is going to be on from 5 to 7. Head On with Bob Kincaid is going to be on from 7 to 10. And John Crazy Like a Fox is going to be on from 10 to 1. And, of course, yours truly will be here from 3 to 5. And so Head On Radio Network will have all live programming on Monday. If you feel compelled to go someplace and listen to reruns of programs, you go right ahead and do so. But you can get live programming right here on the Horn Radio Network, Head On Radio Network on Monday, Memorial Day. So you can get your news, your fun, and the whole ball of wax right here on Monday. Do appreciate having all of you along with us today. It is the start of a holiday weekend. I know lots of people leave work early. You want to see a place where they leave work early? Washington, D.C. They leave like on Thursday and come back on Tuesday. That's kind of like it is. Now the lifers, the bureaucrats, the ones that work 9 to 5 that do the typing and all the hard work there, they work Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 or whatever their hours are. Some of them work some pretty doggone long hours, that's for sure. But your person, you know, your people with that are appointed to the high-level jobs, the elected officials and all that, they do take some liberties with the work week. I will say that. They most certainly do. They lots of travel time. I think that's They can say what they want to, the politicians can, but it's the good life. It really is the good life, even though they do have gun scares in their life they did today. That was a hoot. If you weren't listening early on in the program, they found out that the gunshots that they heard in the building today there was the elevator mechanic banging on the side of the elevator with a hammer. So those were your 38 caliber gunshots that everybody heard. Hey, we get our crazy letters. I don't know if I got time for this or not. I'm afraid our good friend Shelley the Republican got carried away with this letter, and I probably should have done it earlier. But I might have time to do this for the end of the program. Trying to change us all over to being good right-wing fundamental Republicans. And the subject of this letter, it actually says subject. Why are liberals afraid to face the facts? Guy, unfortunately, you are still doing your radio show. You probably can't admit your mistakes. I wish I knew where your hate against the American way of life originates. Today, I would... Look at this. Today, like it's your show. Today, I would like to talk about the Bill of Rights and why I think this old paper should be either rewritten or just thrown out altogether. Maybe I don't want to read the rest of this. It goes on to say, we all know the stupid old laws that still exist. For example, in Baltimore, Maryland, it's not legal to take a lion to the movies. Or in Topeka, Kansas, servers are forbidden to serve wine in teacups. Well, I don't know much about the old times, but they seem to be very strange, if not stupid. Whatever you want to call those laws and regulations, I think we can all agree that they're outdated. On 9/11, the terrorist killers brought the war to our shores, which was only made possible because Bill Clinton significantly weakened the capabilities of the CIA to protect the homeland. Well, we could argue about that. Thank God our great president was taking care of this mess and protected us. Unfortunately, in some cases, his hands were tied due to old, outdated laws like the so-called Bill of Rights. Let me suggest a new and better version of some of the amendments. Article 3. Congress can make laws respecting an establishment of religion because the citizens are free to worship the Lord as they wish, or abridging the freedom of speech and peaceably to assemble in certain previously defined free speech zones, which shall be out of sight of the enemy. That's a beaut. Article 6, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated as long as the citizen complies with the current anti-terrorism laws. Warrants shall be issued if there is reason to believe that the citizen is a suspicious liberal individual. And Article 10, excessive bail may be required, and excessive fines can be imposed, and cruel punishments may be inflicted if the citizen holds back information that could be useful to the United States or its government. Any method of punishment is permitted as long as it is beneficial to the welfare and financial health of the citizens of the United States. According to the website Capitol Hill Blue, some left-wing traitor website, President George Bush once said that the Constitution is just some old paper. Good Republicans always deny that this is true, but I say I hope it is true. Our president has a great sense of justice and decency. That much from me. Regards, and may God have mercy on your soul, Shelley Goodman. Well, Shelley, thank you for thinking of my soul. I do appreciate it. I try and look out for it a little bit myself, and hopefully someone else is as well, and it's good to know that you are wanting my soul to have some mercy, too. It's really a kind thought. Hey, what a quiet day it's been here at the Guy James Show. It really has. It's been a very, very, very quiet day. But like I said, Friday on a holiday weekend is always a light day. That's why your big time, big money talk show host and all that usually take this day off and take Monday off as well and enjoy the long weekend on their yachts or in their homes in Palm Beach, Florida, or wherever you go when you're making $30 million a year. I don't know where I would go if I made $30 million a year and had the opportunity this weekend to go. Let me see. I live in one of the most beautiful places on the planet, so where would I want to go? I don't know. I'd probably, and I'm not kidding, I'd probably drive just a few miles from here and go over to one of the beautiful beaches on one of the islands close by here. That's about as good as you can get, really. Where we live here in Southwest Florida is a beautiful area. We do call it paradise. It is overcrowded at times during the, quote, season. And we don't have enough roads, and we don't have enough infrastructure and all that. But when you get past all of that, it is a very, very beautiful place. Many, many pristine beaches around here. And despite the hurricanes that we've had in the last couple of years, it is still a fantastically beautiful place. Sanibel Island and Captiva Island and Marco Island, Florida. And a place we particularly love, not far from here, called Barefoot Beach. And it truly is Barefoot Beach. Wonderful, wonderful beaches here. So if you've never visited Southwest Florida, I would encourage you to do so. The Chamber of Commerce has not paid me a dime to say that, but I think many of us who live in this particular area would be good ambassadors for the Chamber of Commerce of Southwest Florida. Hey, I hope you don't mind my rant about how beautiful it is in Southwest Florida. It's been so good to have you along with us here this afternoon. I appreciate your listenership so very much today and every single day. And I do hope you'll come back and join us on Monday. Bring your hot dogs, bring your potato salad, and come and join us here on the Guy James Show and everybody on the Hit On Radio Network this coming Monday. We will be here. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. And we will too. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a good one.